Welcome back to the Roundtable. I'm Sarah LeDuc.
Every Tuesday at approximately 6:30 p.m., the Queen of the United Kingdom has a private audience with her Prime Minister. The meeting takes place in the private audience room located on the first floor of Buckingham Palace.
The audience is a play by Peter Morgan, directed by Stephen Daldry, and starring Helen Mirren as Queen Elizabeth II. It opened in the West End in 2013, earning Olivier Awards for Mirren and one of her co-stars, Richard McCabe. McCabe portrays Harold Wilson, who was a British Labour Party politician and served as the Prime Minister of the United Kingdom from 1964 to 1970 and 1974 to 1976. In the audience, Peter Morgan has written imagined conversations between the Queen and her Prime Ministers. The play floats from year to year and decade to decade, making use of theatre and costume quick change magic and, of course, the skill of tremendous performers. The audience is nominated for 3 Tony Awards, one for Dame Mirren, one for Bob Crowley for costume design, and one for Richard McCabe, who joins us now. Richard, welcome to the Roundtable.
Thank you very much.
How did you come to the production of The Audience? When did you first hear about the play, and then how did you get cast in it?
I was asked to go along and meet Stephen Daldry. I knew nothing about it, really, and I'm always a little suspicious of these plays that are so-called, in inverted commas, verbatim plays, you know, where people are imagining conversations. But when I read the script, I thought it was so wonderful. Peter had done such a nuanced, subtle, very fine piece of writing that I thought I should go and meet Stephen, who I'd wanted to meet anyway because he's a fabulous director. So I went, and I remember reading and then not hearing anything for about 2 months, which by which time, of course, I thought, oh, well, you know, that's not happening. And then out of the blue, I just got a phone call offering me the part. But I think perhaps because it's the key relationship in the play with Helen, I think Stephen probably wanted to be doubly sure that he was getting the right person.
And he has.
Well,
I know, you can't say it. I can, though. I can say so. And so how do you go about creating the character who's based, of course, on a real person, who is a real person? What does your research contain?
Well, like any play that involves an historical person, you have to be true to the author's vision, not necessarily the reality. I mean, this is true of King Richard III was Shakespeare, for instance, or perhaps, you know, Mozart in Amadeus, which I've also played a couple of times. You have to embrace what the author is trying to say with the character. And I think Peter has made him, I think, probably a far more sympathetic, lovable man than, I mean, he was, don't get me wrong, he was very popular. He had the common touch. But I think Peter, as with the Queen, has made her, you know, all things to all men, really. So it's a very sympathetic portrayal. And I think, you know, Wilson the politician was a far harder, you know, as you have to be in that job, really, than the play presents. It was interesting during rehearsals, because Peter was with us, which is a great luxury, because you don't often, you know, when you're doing a Shakespeare play, you can't think, oh, what do you mean by this, Will? What's this? What does this line mean? He was right there. And we were able to develop and change quite a bit the 3 scenes. Initially, it was far more politic heavy. And during the course of rehearsals, we took out a lot of the politics and put in far more of the personal. And then in the 3rd scene, which shows Wilson's early onset Alzheimer's, that I remember that scene got rewritten almost daily. We were in there trying to get the right balance, trying to make it not too sentimental, you know, still have humor in there and the warmth of the relationship. So a lot of it was really dependent on what Peter had written. Of course I read all the biographies of Wilson, and I tried very hard to look and find his mannerisms as well. You know, he's quite fidgety. He's got his hands in his pockets. He's fiddling with his tie and his, you know. So I try to incorporate that. He has a sort of gap between his front teeth, I notice, which is almost like a beaver teeth, you know. So I had some a full set of teeth, front teeth, top teeth made, which interestingly actually pushes the mouth out at the front, and it sort of helped with it because he has this Yorkshire accent, which is another thing for American audiences. I realised that it was too thick, really. And during rehearsals over here, I asked the stage management, are people going to understand what I'm saying? And I said, is it the equivalent of listening to perhaps a deep southern accent for us in Britain? And the stage management said, yeah, perhaps it is. So what I've done is I've sort of, I'm not quite so accurate with my Yorkshire accent for American audiences, just for terms of clarity, really, and being understood. So I guess it's a combination of all those things, really.
Yeah, that is... That's a lot to think about. A lot goes into it. Because your accent isn't a Yorkshire accent, so then you put one on, thick, where right. people will understand it in England, and then scale it back over here. Yeah. What else had to change in bringing the show to the States?
Little textual things, which American audiences don't get, and still don't get, I'm afraid, because there are... well, naturally, why should you? You know, I mean, you don't... What do you know about British politics, really? Although I have to say, the play is not about British politics, really. I mean, it's about the sort of the hopes and fears and disillusionments and sadness of being in the top job, whether it be the Queen or any of the Prime Ministers, and the loneliness of being in that job as well. But we did have to change little things. There's one gag in particular, which Helen used to get a belter on, that... about the coalition, you know, the coalition government, which used to be a huge laugh in London. And you can see, you can almost see the audiences scratching their heads thinking, what does that mean? But I had a particular line with her in one of the scenes where I was comparing her, saying that, you know, underneath all this pomp and circumstance is actually a pretty ordinary woman, a good left-wing woman, a Labour woman, because Harold Wilson was leader of the Labour Party, which is... I guess the equivalent of your Democrats, although probably more left-wing than the Democrats. And so I would say to her, there's a good Labour woman there, which was, a belter in London. And I came over here, and it wasn't getting the laugh, and we couldn't work out what, you know, why, really. And then one night, Helen, funny enough, said, why don't you say union woman? So I tried it, and of course... audiences understood what that meant, you know, as a union woman, and it gets a similar sort of laugh now. So it's that thing, really. It's just little, odd little textual changes to help clarity for American audiences, yeah.
You mentioned having the playwright in the room as you get the show ready. Is that the main difference between doing classics, which you do very often, and doing a new show?
Very much so, yeah, because a new play is not set in stone. Any new play that I've done, that's always been the case. The author has been there. You can sense when something isn't working as you're rehearsing it, you know. So it's a great luxury to have them there and say, can we, you know, perhaps try this? I think it would be really good if could you incorporate something like, you know, Peter's wonderful like that because he's written for television quite a lot. He's very good at sitting down and saying, give me 10 minutes. And he sits down at his laptop and he produces something, you know, which you then find out the next, because you take it and you read it and you think, oh, this is good. And then 24 hours later when you've digested it, you think, well, that bit's good. That bit's not quite so. So, yeah. So we really made him work. But he's such a fantastic writer that he was able to do that. Yes, but that is the case. With dead authors, what can you do? Really, what can you do?
You mentioned you've done Amadeus a couple of times.
A few times.
What about that role or any role, if you've returned, makes you want to do it again? Why did you want to explore it more than once?
Well, particularly with Amadeus, I've played Mozart twice. I've actually done the show three times because then I did Salieri. I'm a musician, and my first love is music. And when I was first asked to do it in the early 80s, I did it. I wrote a set of variations, and I used to play live. And then the second time I did it again, I played all these, which, even if I say so myself, were rather splendid Mozart pastiches. It was endlessly fascinating. But as a musician, I far more identify with Salieri than Mozart. So the last time I had a chance, there was a famous conductor, he's dead now, sadly, called Richard Hickox in London. and he had an orchestra, the London Sinfonia. And I had the chance to do the play with a live orchestra, a full chorus, and soloists. So whenever there was a musical extract, as there are many in the play, they would actually be played live. I mean, it was just the most glorious experience. Oh, I loved that. So it's just endlessly fascinating for me, that play. I think because of the nature of our sense of self-worth and mediocrity, really.
For the most part in the audience, there's one person on stage with Helen Mirren. Obviously, it's not 100% true because the equerry and then the queen's younger self is there sometimes too. But for the most part, it's one person and Dame Helen Mirren on stage. Is there still a backstage camaraderie with everyone?
Good question. It is one of those things that when we were rehearsed in London, Stephen used to insist on doing a run of the play at the end of every week, which, as you can imagine, the first week was just, as he said, a car crash, you know, I mean, because none of us knew what we were doing. But it wasn't so much to run the play, it was to get us all together in the same room at the same time, because that is very important. We do tend to just sit in our dressing rooms isolated from each other. And then at the very end of the play, we all appear together at the back wall. So before the curtain comes up, we're all standing there nattering away to each other, because for many, it's the first time we've seen each other all evening, you know. But having said that, there is a sort of a warmth and a bond between us, actually. Yeah, which is odd, considering that we don't interact with each other. But it's been very interesting. What's nice is to know that American actors are just the same as British actors. You know, it's sort of universal, really. The family of, the tribe, as Helen calls it, the tribe of actors.
Most of the cast did change from moving from London to the States. Why?
A couple of things. I think the American equity only allow a certain amount. It's a sort of an exchange program, if you like. You know, you have some of ours, we'll take some of yours. But it was also that several people in the cast had young families. And the idea of being away, it means either relocating for 6 months, you know, which actually Rufus Wright did with his wife and young son. So they've actually moved over here for the others, they felt it was too much taking them out of school and everything. So that is partly, it's those two things combined, I think.
Were you always going to come with the show?
I think so. Well, no, actually, I got on very well with Helen too. So, you know, I really wanted to sort of pursue that. And it was very good to me as well. You know, I sort of got an Olivier Award out of it in London. So I thought...
You sort of did, yes. You absolutely did. And now a Tony nomination here.
A Tony nomination, yes, which was rather thrilling, which I really didn't expect, because no one had... No one had told me that they announced these things at 8:30 in the morning. Because, you know, we're theatre people. We live in the evening. So I was sort of fast asleep. And then I got a call which woke me up. And it was my partner screaming down the phone at me that I'd been nominated. And then I looked and there was a whole list of missed calls and, you know, emails. And, oh, my God, what if I have missed all this? Well, I'll know for next time.
Is your partner in London?
Yes, yeah, she's a costume designer, and she hasn't been able to get out at the moment since we've started. She's been doing a television version of The Dresser, starring Anthony Hopkins and Ian McKellen. She's been doing the costumes on that, so she was unable to come out on press night because they were in the middle of filming that. And she's between the RSC and an Opera North company at the moment. But she's coming out next Friday for a week. So I'm really thrilled, actually, because it'll be the first time I've seen her since January. Yeah.
And so you learned from her that you were nominated.
I learned from her that I was nominated, which is rather nice.
Yeah, that's kind of perfect. Sort of the best.
Yeah, exactly.
Otherwise, who would have told you? Bruce Willis.
Yeah, not quite the same, is it?
I don't think of the same personal connection. Well, congratulations. The show is beautiful and you're wonderful in it. Thank you so much for speaking with me today.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Richard McCabe plays Prime Minister Harold Wilson in The Audience, running in Broadway's Schoenfeld Theater on West 45th Street in New York City through June 28th. I'm Sarah LaDuke, and you're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.